Like we said, we are a speaker meeting this evening. We do have a speaker, I'm delighted to say, who's going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us for 40, 45 minutes. Their journey to, into, and through Narcotics Anonymous, whatever they're comfortable with. And I'm going to hand you over to the lovely Helene, who's going to introduce them. So, Helene, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everyone. My name is Ellen, and I'm an addict.
Hello.
Ellen.
Hey, everybody. Gosh, my heart is beating so strong, like a loud drum. I'm surprised you all can't hear it. This person that is coming to share with us has such a big place in my heart. I've known her for, I think, this year is 30 years. And for many of those years, I used to be 6 years older than her. And I think in a week's time, we're swapping roles. And I've heard her share a few times, but this is going to be the longest time I hear her share, although I've known her for so many years, and she's such a big inspiration for me and someone I love so much. So with no further ado, Charlie Lou, come and share with us. Thank you.
Hi everyone, my name is Charlie Lou and I'm an addict.
Hi, Charlie Lou. Welcome to the meeting.
Charlie
Thank
Lou,
you.
welcome
Hey,
to the
Charlie
meeting.
Lou.
Charlie Lou. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Charlie.
Firstly, thank you, Ellen, for that wonderful introduction. Brought tears to my eyes. We've known each other for a very long time, and I was delighted when I heard that you'd got into recovery and into NA, into a place that I found my family, found safety and love and peace, man. Oh my God, I sounded like a proper hippie then. Peace, man. That was a complete and utter accident. But anyway, yeah, man, I found peace and contentment and a place, and I learned the tools how to live and not be a knobhead, basically, the long and the short of it, because I was a mental head case knob. And that's all changed because of this stuff and because of NA and the people in it and my higher power and just putting one foot in front of the other when I felt like I couldn't go on anymore. And yeah, Elena's right. It's my clean time birthday next week. I was originally going to be sharing on my clean time birthday, but I'm actually going to a rave. Which is one of the many gifts that I have in my life today as a result of this stuff is I have a group of mates who are all in recovery, who all have a massive love of drum and bass, and we are called the Sweaty Recovery Ravers, and we go raving frequently, and it just so happens that we're going next Saturday on my clean time birthday. So we moved me forward, but yeah, the gifts of recovery are numerous, but the thing that I think I have most is gratefulness, because yeah, I can sometimes get bogged down in life now because it's been a while. I've been doing this a while now, and I can get bogged down in the bullshit. And so doing things like connecting every morning with other addicts and doing something so simple as a gratitude list reminds me of how freaking lucky I am to be alive and of the basic things that I have, which I can take for granted now that my life is busy. So yeah, I came into recovery, I came into NA about 9 years ago, tried to get clean for about a year. But back then I was kind of in denial about, well, no, that's bullshit, that's in itself. I knew I had a drug problem. I didn't think I had a good enough drug problem because I wasn't a heroin addict. So I didn't think I was a proper addict. So I didn't really feel like I had my place in NA. So at the time I was doing online meetings, which aren't like what they are now, like with Zoom and shit. Like it was audio and it was crazy messy. And I was just dipping in and out. And it wasn't until someone else, a counselor, actually, I was having counseling and therapy for domestic violence, and it was the therapist who was like, "You need to get clean, and you need to go to a physical meeting." And sort of her validation of my addiction allowed me to walk in the doors of NA. Because that's just that statement there just sums up my whole life of using. It's just I needed validation because I was never in my head, I was never good enough. I wasn't funny enough, I wasn't tall enough, I wasn't sexy enough, I wasn't clever enough, I wasn't, do you know what I mean? It didn't matter what it was, I just was never enough in my head. And so yeah, I needed someone else to tell me that I had a good enough drug problem, as it were, to get into NA. And yeah, I think so. It's 8 years. I'll be clean 8 years in a week. And the most scary time of my life was the first 90 days of recovery. I found it the most upsetting and mentally challenging and scariest time because it wasn't putting the drugs down. I mean, I knew that I had a drug problem, as I said, right? But I didn't realize I had such a big problem with alcohol. And I remember my first meeting and them saying about alcohol being a drug, and I was like, what? I was fuming. I was like, how? I just didn't understand how I was going to get through my life without having a drink. Do you know what I mean? Just like at Christmas and stuff, or like I was only 29 when I got clean, and it was like 6 months before my 30th. So I was like, how the fuck am I going to get through my 30th without having a drink? Like, I just couldn't comprehend it. And yeah, so basically, as a result of getting clean, it became apparent that I was mentally very unwell, and I'd basically been using for most of my life to cover up the fact that I had mental health conditions because I didn't know how to live. In the early days, like in my early teens, you know, I used, and it kept me alive, and kept me from killing myself because it was the only thing that allowed me to continue. So when the drugs and the drink stopped, like it was like I was hit with a ton of bricks. Like all the feelings and stuff I'd been pushing away for 15, 16, 17 years, whatever it was, like it literally felt like a ton of bricks had landed on top of me, and I could not cope. And you know, when I get a bit complacent with my recovery, which I can do, do you know what I mean? I'm not perfect, and I do struggle to keep myself in a routine. So when if things start going a bit wobbly, like I always think about that time because people say like, oh, they haven't got a relapse in them or whatever, but I haven't got another early recovery in me, man. I can't do that again. Like I don't know how I survived it, but I did. I mean, I was very lucky with the people that I had back around me. I was on suicide watch for quite a long time, but anyway, my early recovery was pretty dark and pretty sketchy, and I made it through, and I got help with my mental health, and I'm still on medication for my mental health. I probably will always be, and that's okay. I have a medical condition, and that's what I need to stay level-headed. I had a lot of therapy because I needed outside help. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't just about putting the drugs down for me. I needed help, and so it took quite a long time for me to be okay. You know, I've had two visits to the psych unit since I've been in recovery. One was only this time last year, and actually, what I was doing was piling myself up with stuff. And I was doing recovery. I was doing service at three levels, doing regional, group, and area. Couldn't think what the other one was then. And you know, I was on it. You know, I love service. I've always done a lot of service, and I really enjoy doing service out of group level and doing, you know, like I was doing share review, and I was RCM at Region for a bit and for 2 years, and I was doing share of H&I. But it got to a point where I was doing service for other people, and I was doing meetings for other people. I wasn't going for me, and work was getting on top. I was just really busy, and I had money pressure is another thing that I really struggle with, and it just all come on top. I ended up really ill last year. So since then, for this whole year, I've taken a massive step back from service. I handed in all my service positions apart from being a sponsor. And I just can't, I started going back to meetings for me, and I took it back to basics, and yeah, and tried to build back up again. So anyway, I digress. So early recovery with Shunky, and I got into a nasty relationship with, well, it wasn't, it didn't start off nasty. I got in a relationship with another addict who was 18 months clean when I was a year. And it was great. It was amazing actually for the first 4 months, and then he relapsed and it caused absolute carnage in my life. To the point where I basically moved to the other side of the world to make sure that he couldn't find me. And that was hard because I'd had a previous nasty relationship for 4 years before I'd got into recovery. And I kind of fell into that pity party of why has this always happened to me? But it's the low self-esteem, low self-worth stuff. Do you know what I mean? And one thing that I have found is that I'm not just addicted to drugs or drink or whatever it is. I'm addicted to chaos. My life was chaos in active addiction. And in my early part of my recovery, my life was chaos. With men, with whatever I could freaking use. Because when I put down the drugs and the drink, I was just scrambling to try and make myself feel better. And try and change the way that I felt because I was so lost. So anyway, chaos. Basically, my life was chaos, and it took a move to the other side of the world and a year over there on my own to kind of really find out who I was. And you see, that's the thing as well. Like, that's another gift, right? I would never, ever have been able to do anything like that while I was using, because I was always a planner of things that never materialized. Like, I can't even tell you the amount of colleges and courses I've started, or like careers that I've decided, like career changes. Do you know what I mean? I've done so many different things, started so much and finished so little. Because I was always trying to change something. I was always trying to change some external thing to make me feel better, when in actual fact I just needed to feed my soul because I was in bits. And you know, it's taken, like I say, it's taken a lot, but you know, my soul's pretty good these days. I've got good people around me. I do things that feed my soul, and I try and do esteemable things, and I try and be a good person every day, and I try and make amends for the shit that I did. And at the moment, I'm doing a lot of self-care because I'm trying to repair the damage I did to my body and to my soul. Because, you know, my amends list was massive. Do you know what I mean? I did a lot of harm, but I didn't harm anyone else as much as I did myself, physically and mentally. And so at the moment, I've been like doing things and getting things sorted that I've been putting off, like to do with my health and like having some like cranial sacral therapy. I had a massage yesterday. I've gone back to my PT because I need some. I'm terrible. I'm the biggest procrastinator in the world. Like, my step work takes me ages. I'm like, I have to get a bollocking off my sponsor because I will manipulate the shit out of everything. I don't want to do the hard graft. I want the easy way out. And so even though I'm however many years down the line, I will still try and swerve it. So it's the same with training. Like, I have to end up paying someone to tell me what to do so that I do it. Otherwise, I won't do it. Like, the amount of times I'm like, right, I'm going to start Couch to 5K. Right, I'm going to join this gym. I'm going to do this class. Do I do it? Do I fuck? Because I will self-sabotage myself. I am my own worst enemy. So I need to be held accountable, not just with my recovery, but with my fitness. But it's part of self-care. Because I love my body today. I tell myself that I love my body today because for a really long time I didn't like me, and I just battered myself. And being able to look after myself, it's not only making a daily amends to myself, but I make a daily amends to my family because I'm looking after myself. They know I'm okay, because for so long I was not okay, and they were worried about me. And even up until, you know, last year, when they're having to watch me and having a fucking mental breakdown again, like, I don't want to put them through that. And my dad got diagnosed with Parkinson's disease about a year ago. And it's been a really, really tough year. It's a whole new level of powerlessness watching someone that you love kind of disintegrate a little bit, a day at a time. And my dad was a builder. really active, all could never sit still, ants in his pants. Like when he was at home, he'd be in the garden, he'd be doing something. And my dad spent the most of the last year in bed because he's tired and he's frustrated and he's down. And that isn't my dad, and it's really, really hard to watch. And I try and help, try and be as supportive as I can, but there's fuck all I can do about it. But what I can do is I can just be here and be as much help as I can be and not be a worry or a burden, and also be here for my mum. Because again, I was never here for them when anything, like if I was still using, this would have been a perfect excuse for me to disappear and blow out and not be here, because I didn't want to face the hard stuff. I could never face the hard stuff. I would always be away on the hard stuff. Yeah. So it's been a tough year. Yeah, it's been a tough year, but I'm still clean and I'm still plugging away and I'm just trying to take care of myself. And that's a big, big gift of recovery. Where did I get to in my story? So anyway, I had that nasty relationship and did a lot of therapy, went to Australia, kind of sorted myself out a bit and came home. And I found, you know, I didn't get a sponsor for the first maybe 9 months of my recovery. I would definitely not recommend that, because I was running on self-will and I was just an addict that wasn't using drugs or drink. Like I was using anything else I could find: sex, men, food. You know, I started, like, I was doing sex work in active addiction, and I picked it up again in recovery to feed my sex addiction. Do you know what I mean? It's not fucking normal behavior. So yeah, I would not recommend not having a sponsor for that amount of time. I also picked my first sponsor because I thought she was a bit of a lunatic like me, and two lunatics do not make a right. And yeah, it wasn't, we weren't together that long. And this, I've had a couple. I'm on my third sponsor, but I've been with her now for maybe 6 years. We're currently working our way through the principles. But yeah, she is everything that I want to be. You know, she's calm, she's loving, she's happy, she's settled, she's a nice person. I think, I don't even know how old she is. I think she must be about 80. I know she's like 45 years clean. But she's just, when I'm her age, I want to be her. You know, I'd like to be just, she goes away and does these amazing things. She's just been down a cruise up through Norway and seen all the Northern Lights and shit. And I mean, she's 80. But I want to be doing that stuff, like exploring the world. And yeah, I don't need some nutter, because I was that nutter. So I don't need the same. So yeah, I think someone said to me, find someone that you want to be, that emanates recovery to you, not someone that's like you. Because two wrongs don't make a right, as I found out the hard way. But yeah, I mean, she's amazing. She's cute and loving, but Christ, she kicks me up the arse if I need it. And I do need it, because I will manipulate my way out of a situation. Like I said, I procrastinate for, well, till the nth degree. If I can get away with it, I will. And she doesn't allow me to do that. She gives me a kick up the arse when I need it, and I appreciate that. So I was talking about service earlier, and I've actually recently just picked up another a new service position, just a sec alternate secretary in a women's meeting. And it's nice to be back in the fold. I've missed it. I've missed being like in the thick of it in NA, and I miss the connection, because I used to know so many people. And like the area that I live in, I don't go out really in the area, because my nephew makes a joke of it. Like, no matter where we go, I will see at least two, three people that I know or that know me. And I don't like that anymore. Like, I don't want to have the notoriety. Like, I'm not that person that they think that they know anymore. And also, I did some horrible things. did some horrible things to people, and don't really want to be associated with that anymore. So when I'm back in recovery, like, I know that the people around me get me. They understand the crazy that goes on in my head, because my head will do a number on me. Funny enough, a friend said to me the other day, we were talking about like the internal voice, the internal addict, and my addicts, like when I'm not on, like when I'm not very spiritually well, or I've not been connecting, or something's going on, my negative voice, my addict in my head, tells me I'm not good enough. It tells me, like, I walk past, I don't know, I'm walking down the road and I walk past a shop window and I catch myself, like a view of myself in the window, and I tell myself, you look fat, you look disgusting, look at your hair, no one's going to love you. That's where my brain goes. My mate said to me the other day, like, well, what do you say to that voice? And I tell it to shut up. You know, if I tell it to shut up enough, it goes away. And he said, what did he say? He said, well, how upset would you be if someone told you to fuck off every day? Why don't you ask it, like, what it needs? And I thought, you know, that's really inspired, because it's true. Like, instead of telling my addict to fuck off and be aggressive towards it, why am I not opening a conversation and asking, what's going on for you? How can I help? You know, and I've started doing that. And I've started saying, like, what do you need? Because at the end of the day, my addict, instead of me trying to shut it up and push it away, it's part of me, and I need to embrace that. I need to embrace my shadow. And so asking my addict what she needs, you know, it started to change. Like, there's been a bit of a shift, and I've really started to feel okay in my own skin, even though, like, I'm the biggest I've ever been. But I feel all right in my own skin. And, you know, and I'm single. I've been single for 6 years since that crazy relationship, it fucking did a number on me. But I feel like I'm ready to kind of, I'm ready to have someone in my life. Like, I'm not bothered if there is or there isn't, if that makes sense. Like, my life's pretty good and I'm really busy. But it would be nice to share things with someone. Like, it'd be nice to have a cuddle. Like, it's just the little things that I've started to miss. So I've, like, tried to, like, go back on dating websites, and they are freaking savage, man. They are toxic and soul destroying. And previously, when I've been on them, it's become an addiction, like checking it. Like, it's like that self-valid, like that validation thing. I need it. How many likes have I got? Has he messaged? Blah, blah, blah. It's freaking insane. But this time, I'm trying to kind of, I'm leaving it up to the universe, because my higher power, to me, she's the universe, right? I'm not religious. Like, the word God to me, I struggle with it. So she's my HP, my higher power. And she's the universe, right? And if I put good things out, good things come back, like karma. I believe in karma. And so I'm just letting her crack on with it. Like, I'm putting myself out there. And if it happens, it happens. But if it doesn't, that's okay. But I feel like I'm in a place now where I don't need that validation, if that makes sense. Like, I don't need someone to tell me I look okay, because I know that I look okay. And not in, like, a big ego way, but that's humility, right? My sponsor said to me once, you know, I'm good at my job. And just, we were talking about humility and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'm all right at my job. She was like, no, Char, you're good at your job, because people keep coming back to see you. You are good at your job. And she said to me, you know, humility isn't just about, you know, accepting your flaws. It's also about, you know, acknowledging your assets and acknowledging what you're good at, you know. And I'm a good person today. You know, I am good at my job. I am kind, and I am funny and sexy and attractive and all these things. But I'm also a bit of a dick, and I can be really stubborn and prideful and nasty when I want to be. But the difference is today is that I can reflect, because I never had no reflection before. I work at, oh man, I could never say sorry. Sorry was not a word that was in my vocabulary. It was, you know, it was my way or the highway. And you know, today it's not like that. Today I can say sorry. It might take me a couple of weeks to say sorry, But I'll get there. But most of the time I can turn around instantly and say, oh shit, I was a dick now, I'm sorry. Or if someone says to me that hurt or whatever, instead of being defensive, I can acknowledge what they're saying and apologize for that, making them feel like that, because it's not how I want to be today. I don't want to be seen as the aggressor. I don't want to be seen as Charlie Big Potatoes, because that's what I was. And that's who I used to be. And sometimes I can go back into that place, especially if I walk into a room of women. I am much more comfortable in men's company, especially like builders. My dad's a builder. He took me on site with him from a really young age. So I'm quite handy with DIY. But as a result, that's the company that I feel most comfortable in. So I had a patient today, builder. I'm sitting there having a giggle. And then my next patient is a young girl. Not so, I don't feel quite as, I don't know, in my flow, if that makes sense. So if I walk into a room of women, instantly my guard goes up and I feel myself stepping back, because it's self-conscious. And I'm quite like outgoing and mouthy, but if I'm in a group of women, I don't know, I tend to shut up, because it's like I'm judging a situation, because again, it's old behavior, right? Because I'm number one trying to keep myself safe, because I've been beaten up by untold women. Also, I'm pretty, and I've always had problems with women with because of jealousy or, well, jealousy. Do you know what I mean? I've had it my whole life with women. And so I kind of just, sometimes I think I've squashed myself to make myself a little bit less conspicuous to stay out of harm's way. So, why am I talking about that? Yeah, anyway, so oh yeah, changing behavior. So that's something that I still do. It's a place of I go to a place of fear. My best mate, who's also in recovery, she is like a happy bunny. Like, she's so smiley and bubbly and will talk to anyone. And I envy her that ability to just be like, to just be able to go and talk to people. Like, I still do find that so difficult. Even what I do for work is one to one with patients. I'm fine in the patient room. Get me out of the patient room. I'm like, don't talk to me. It's my go-to place of back the fuck up, Scruffy. Like, I am dangerous. And I get a screw face, which I don't mean to, but it's just a habit. It's just old behavior of fear and not being good enough and trying to fit into someone's box so that they'll like me. So yeah, I can still go into that place of fear and insecurity, I suppose. Insecurity. What was I talking about? Can't remember. Anyway. Oh yeah, talking about humility. Yeah, so my sponsor is an absolute queen, and I wouldn't be anywhere without her. But what she's also given me is the ability to be a sponsor myself. And I think with all the gifts out of recovery, that is a huge gift. I've never learned so much about myself. I've never been so challenged. And I've never been filled with so much love and pride and, I don't know, gratitude, I suppose, from working with other women in recovery. I had the privilege of going to one of my sponsees' weddings last year. And on the groom speech, both her parents are in recovery as well. On the groom, groom, sorry, the father of the bride speech, her parents thanked me for being there for her. And because yeah, and what a beautiful thing. I mean, I cried my eyes out. But I didn't do anything for her. She did it all. I just talked her through it. Do you know what I mean? I didn't do anything special. I just did what I had been taught by my sponsor, who was taught by her sponsor, and so forth and so on and whatnot. What a beautiful thing. And I'll treasure that forever. And my other sponsor, she currently lives in Berlin, and they've been there a year now, and They've gone from a she to they, to a they, which I still struggle with occasionally. But the journey they've been on is unbelievable. And they've taught me a lot about myself, about non-binary and LGBTQ, I can't even say that properly, LGBTQ plus community, because I'm straight and I have like some gay friends, but not close. And so it's been, as again, I've learned so much, and it's a beautiful thing, you know. Different communities that I wasn't a part of and not aware, like not aware of, but do you know what I mean? I didn't have much connection with. Yeah, so again, they've taught me so much, and I'm so proud of them. And hopefully, at some point this year, I'll be going over to see them in Berlin. Because travel, I absolutely love traveling. It's, you know, living in Australia for a year just gave me. It gave me the travel bug, but it just gave me so much. It proved to myself that I can do life, if that makes sense. Like, for so long, life has been so difficult. In and out of recovery, I've always found life hard, and being over there, it just gave me such a big perspective. Like, there is so much more to the world than the sh like. It showed me that I don't need to sweat the small stuff. Do you know what I mean? That shit doesn't actually really matter. And it just, yeah, showed me how to let go. And recovery over there is a little bit different. I struggled with it. The meeting structure is a little bit different. It's a little bit more fluid, and they pick you to share. And I really did struggle with it. It's one of the reasons I came home, actually. That and my dad. But yeah, I mean, again, I've been all over the world, and I've been to recovery NA meetings in all those countries. And I mean, how beautiful is that? It doesn't matter where I am in the world, I can get to an NA meeting. And even more so now with Zoom and stuff, like, it doesn't matter where I am, as long as I've got some connection, like, I can go to a meeting. Like, I used to do one of the meetings in the UK back when I was in Oz, so I could still connect with like my home group and stuff, and that was amazing. You know what? A beautiful thing, you know. I'm put technology on my gratitude list a lot, because without it, I wouldn't have, you know, I've got friends all over the place and all over the world because of NA. And you know, it's we talk I was talking about amends earlier, and amends with my family, daily amends. Like, I've having drama with my sister at the minute. Basically, we've not spoken in 7 months. We all live together, right? Me, my mum, and my dad are in the main house. My sister's in the barn with her three kids. We're all close, quite close to each other, and yet my sister's not spoken to me in 7 months, and I've not spoken to her. And it's been tough. And I know that my sister's reaction to the situation wasn't aimed at me because she was in pain. But the problem is that I did a lot of damage to my sister. I did a lot of harm, and so whenever something kind of I don't know, some there's something going on with me, or with me and her relationship, or there's something that I've done that she doesn't quite like, then it's like, oh, shit hits the fan, and it's like an overreacted reaction. And you know, it's been hard. It's been really hard. It's not just been hard on me, it's been hard on my mum and dad. And I've been, you know, the first 3 months I was absolutely in bits about it, and then I was okay about it, and then the last month I've been resentful, like, to the max, like, hating her. And it's, but do you know what it is? It's because she's got a new boyfriend and she's happy, and it fucking irritates me. And she's talking to my mum again. Well, she wasn't talking to my mum for 3 months. She started talking to my mum again. So it went from her throwing her toys out of the pram, hating all of us, talking to dad, then she's talking to mum, and it's just me on my own. So I think there's an element of that. But it's my stuff, right? People say to me, I'll just go and talk to her. Problem is I know my sister, right? She doesn't have a program, and the girl is stubborn, as am I. But I am able to look today, as I was saying earlier, at my own shit and put my hands up and go, I was a bit of a dick then. I'm sorry. My sister doesn't have that ability. She also doesn't have the ability to deal with emotion. Like, she's not one of us, but there's something going on there. Like, fuck knows what it is, but there's something going on there. And me being who I am, even though I'm as of next week, 8 years clean, God willing. Even though I've done all this work and I've come so far, my sister reverts back to Charlie addict, crazy addict, violent, nasty, unreasonable addict, Charlie. And at the end of the day, I can't really do anything about because that's her stuff that she needs to work through. All I can do is the next right thing. I tell you, when I say I've been praying for her, I've been praying for her, right? I have been praying for that girl for months. And has the resentment lifted? Has it? Fuck. However, I was talking to my sponsor this week, and she was talking, saying about suggested that I needed to do some work around forgiveness. And she's given me loads of suggestions and stuff. Because the thing is, I don't think, and this is my character defects, I've never felt so angry with her at the moment as I've felt for a really long time. Like, so angry that I want to pop her eyeballs out with a spoon. Do you know what I mean? And I've wanted to speak to her, but I actually haven't felt like I could trust myself without it. Because if I went over there and got the wrong response, I feel like I would blow my top, and I don't trust myself, And I've not felt like that for a really long time. But what it is, all it is underlying, is pain, because she's hurt me. And so instead of coming out and saying, "You've hurt me," I want to stab her in the face, because that's old behaviour, And no matter how much work I've done on it, because it cuts deep, right? And it brings up old stuff. Like, me and her have always had a troubled relationship because of my behaviour. I give the poor girl PTSD, basically. So what do I expect? All I can do is give it time and try and do the next right thing and just do some work on myself around it, so that when the time comes that we can have a conversation, we don't end up killing each other. Because I've never been to jail, touch wood. But the way that I feel have felt recently, I'd go to jail for murdering her. It's progression, not perfection, right? And life happens, and at the end of the day, I caused her pain. And her she's got three kids. The oldest is 15, Jay. Ola is 8, and Albie is 4, nearly 5. And those her three kids are my favorite three people in the world. I freaking love them. I love being an auntie. Never want my own kids, too much ag, but I love being an auntie. And I the eldest Jay, he's going to be 16 in May. He remembers my using. He remembers the carnage. And the only time he could ever get to spend time with me is if he came round and I was hanging. If I was in bed, dying, he'd come in and get my laptop and watch some random stuff on YouTube or whatever. And that was the only time that he could spend time with me as a kid. And so he remembers that stuff. But he came around the other day for dinner, bless him. And he I dropped him home back to his dad's, and he said, "Auntie Char." I was like, "Yeah." But I've got to tell you something. And I was thinking, oh God. I didn't know what he was gonna say. I was filled with dread. And he's like, I've lost my virginity." Was driving. Right, I feel like he should have told me when I was not driving and like in charge of a vehicle. But anyway, I kind of like got come sort of come back to reality and was just like, okay. And I said to him, thank you for telling me, because we have that kind of relationship. He's more like my brother. Do you know what I mean? He was born when I was 21 and I was mid addiction. So, I didn't start growing up till he started growing up, really. And so, I'm proud of him for telling me. And we had a conversation about it, about protection and stuff. And I said, and then after that, I was like, "I'm so proud of you. Thank you for telling me. Let's never talk about this again." Because at the end of the day, he is my nephew. And it's also really, it's freaking me out that he's that old. But anyway, gift of recovery. My nephew can tell me that he's lost his virginity and he feels okay to do that. And that he wants me to know. And that he wants me to know, that I'm in his confidence today. And he's got a girlfriend and he was talking about her. And I was like, "Have you told her about the family?" He said, "Yeah, I told her about you. He said that you're up there as one of my favourite people." If I, that kind of stuff there was when I first come into recovery, I thought, I thought I was going to get my shit together. I was going to get the big house. I was going to get married. I was going to do all this crazy shit. Have like, I don't know, the normal life. I ain't got none of that. I ain't got none of that stuff that I thought I was going to have. But what I have got is much more important and much more precious. And it's my them kids' confidence and their time and their love and my family. Like I live with my mum and dad. I spent my whole life running away. Like I come back here when I've got kicked out of somewhere or I've moved or something. I've been back here since before COVID. Just before COVID, I moved back and then obviously I went to Australia for a year, but I've come back, I'm here. And I can be there for my mum while she's, processing the fact that my dad's not well. And those little nuggets are what give me the most gratitude. I was talking about gratitude when I first started this share, and it is the little things. My gratitude list this morning. Hang on, let me just pull it up. My gratitude list this morning consisted of things about having a good night's sleep, waking up feeling refreshed and ready for the day, self-care being prominent. Even though I am sore and making old man noises every time I move, I am so pleased to be back with my PT and training again. Being of service tonight at a meeting, the blue sky, sunshine, and fresh air this morning. It's the little things. It's not the big things. Because it's the little things that when I was using, I never even considered. I put my sister on my gratitude list because I'm trying to change that narrative. Because I've been walking around for the last month calling her a cunt. So, also, I apologise for my level of language. You can take the girl out of the gutter, but unfortunately, the gutter don't leave me. So, yeah, I put my sister on my gratitude list because I'm trying to change that narrative. Because I'm trying to get out of the fact of going back to my old. Hang on, 1 second. Yeah, in a minute. So I just live at home. Yeah, I'm trying to change that narrative. I'm trying to get back to a place of peace and a place of calm and a place of contentment, which for so long of my life wasn't a part of my life. And for the last few years, it has been. But since this upset with my sister, it's completely like I've returned my world again. So I'm trying to get back to a place of peace. And by wishing the best for my sister and putting her on my gratitude list, because I am grateful for her. Before this all kicked off a couple of months ago, me and my sister's relationship was really good. And I would often share about how blessed I felt to have her back in my life because it took her about 3 years to give me a cuddle in recovery. And then it took about another year for her to tell me that she, was it cut? Yeah, to tell me that she loved me. It took a really long time for her. And I always would say in my shares, that one of my most amazing things about recovery is my relationship with her. So the fact that our relationship is at the moment broken cuts me hard. But that's why I'm trying to change the narrative because I don't want to go back to being selfish and spiteful and nasty, which is my go-to old behavior because I'm hurt. I'm like a wounded animal. That's basically what I am. So instead of being like that, I'm just trying to be nice, which I find difficult being nice. I'm also really sarcastic, so my go-to is often to take the piss, and I'll take the piss out of myself to make a joke of my insecurities. I'm trying to stop doing that as well. Basically, just trying to stop being horrible to me and everybody else as a go-to. And the other half of my gratitude today was for my higher power, for allowing me to change and grow and leave old behaviours behind. Again, talking about my nastiness. And the other half is affirmations, because like I said, I can tell myself horrible, horrible things. So I remind myself like to love and nurture my body. I remind myself that I am enough because my addict in my head will tell me that I'm not. And even though I'm having a bit of a different conversation with my addict at the moment, trying to find out what she needs rather than telling her to fuck off. But she still comes up when I'm feeling a bit ropey. She's still straight in there because I've always realized since I've come into recovery that my addict wants me dead. My addict wants me back out there using. And I don't often think about using anymore. It doesn't really pop into my head. But what does happen is I should just kill myself. It'd just be easier if I wasn't here. Because I do find life hard. Like I said, like life can be really difficult. But with the tools of recovery, the shit I've spoken about, like doing step work and having a sponsor and doing service and having connections, because I've just remembered what I was talking about originally at the start of this share, but anyway, having connections with people in recovery, being with people who know my crazy head and think the same kind of things that I do and have been to the same places that I've been and done the same horrible things to themselves that I've done, allows me to be free and allows me to be free with them. Being at a drum and bass rave with my mates from recovery, absolutely in the moment, loving the music, I've never felt so free and in the moment as that. I used to go to raves to get absolutely obliterated and I end up in the speaker chewing on my own tongue. Do you know what I mean? I never thought I'd be able to go to a rave or do anything like that. And it's one of my happy places. And that's because the group of people that I have around me. Ellen's sister is one of my oldest and bestest friends. That's how come I know Ellen. And she's one of the only people that I have in my life who isn't in recovery that I see regularly. I think I've got three or four, maybe five people in my life that I'm close to that aren't in recovery. The rest is recovery because I had to let go of a lot of people because they weren't serving me anymore. I'd outgrown them. And also, what happened? I was the first person out of my group to put their hands up and say, I've got a problem and going to recovery. Since I've been in recovery, I've seen like every time, like every month I see someone that I used to use with. People are coming into recovery now. Because if they and but what happened at the time is when I put my hands up and say I'm an addict, they didn't like it because I was reflected back at them. So if I had a problem, then they had a problem. So I got a lot of shit from a lot of people. Also, people still trying to drag me back into that criminality and serving up and shit like that, and I don't want that in my life anymore. I'm self-employed and struggling. When I do my tax, someone will say, oh, just claim this or, do like a false thing. I can't do that. I cannot do that because that's dishonesty. And that stuff leads me back to a place of chaos and discontent, and a couple of steps after that is using, and I'm not doing that shit. I try to be honest. I'm trying to lead a good life today and be a good person, and it starts with the little things. It's those little things. If I start letting them creep back in, that's a slippery slope for me, because like I said, it wasn't just about the drugs. It was about the chaos. I loved being in the thick of it. Yeah, and today I don't. My life is really peaceful and calm generally, apart from my sister, and when the kids are here. But generally, my life is calm and I wouldn't have it any other way. I just want to say thank you for allowing me to share. I don't know how long I've done, but I feel like I'm drying up, and I hope someone got some kind of sense from that. It's really difficult being on a meeting and not seeing people's faces, like when you do a share, because it's I get the feedback like, is this going down well? Like, am I making sense? Kind of thing, like with people nodding and yeah, along. So just being on an audio recording is, yeah, I'm not quite sure where I'm at, but if you didn't get anything from it, like keep coming back and keep listening, because one day someone will tell your story and you'll get the identification. Because it isn't about the differences, it's about the similarities. It doesn't matter about what drug you used or who you used with or how long you used for, or how much or what or where, or it don't matter. It's just about, at the end of the day, it's about the feeling of not feeling good enough and the fear. Yeah, and I'll end it on this. Like, there was this reading in the basic texts. It was one of the stories. It's a Native American dude, and there's a prayer, like a prayer thing that he says in there, and I say it every night before I go to sleep. So I just thought I'd end on it. And it's higher power, let my soul be at rest, my spirit at peace, and my mind untroubled and clean. And I'll leave it there. Thank you for allowing me to share.